Chapter 7. Interlude. Sarek. Starfleet Medical is a pristine facility, but to accommodate the worst, and it seems to Sarek that it is handling itself extremely well given the circumstances. Jim Kirk is in a private room, with doctors and nurses going in and out while Sarek takes up residence in the chair outside, working with Tanya, his chief aide. He is not here to provide support to Jim, but rather to ensure that whenever anyone mentions the fact that Spock is sitting at Jim's bedside, they do not mention it, but the once. He thinks that providing this harbor is the best he can do for both of them right now. Tanya is handling his calls and messages, moving meetings around so that he can do this for his son. Spock has become so withdrawn from them, more social than either of them could have anticipated when he was young. He has friends, and is friendly with a number of peers. But at some point things went awry, and all of Sarek's conversations with his son are superficial. Sybok went through this phase as well, and they came out of it well enough. But Sarek spent years worried that he would drive Sybok away. Spock has already run away twice, though as of yet always with the intention of returning. That may not be the case next time, and so Sarek keeps his silences and trusts that Spock knows that Sarek will be there for him. He thinks that the fact that Spock has called him, white as snow and shaking, desperate, shows that his son yet trusts him. He is not logical when it comes to his children. He suspects they both know and revel in it. Still, Spock did not call Amanda before departing with Sybok, and she is furious and hurt and scared, and he cannot blame her. He does not know what to say to reassure her, and she reads book after book about codependency and abusive relationships, and Sarek thinks that Sybok is not far behind her, both of them believing Spock to be unhealthily attached. Sybok does not believe in the concept of T'Hyla, has never experienced it. Not many do, but Sarek knows how to recognize it, and thinks that Spock is not the only one they should be so very concerned about. He can see the way Jim has angled his body toward Spock, the way he keeps contact, and the way he defers to Spock every time a doctor speaks. More often than not, it is Spock who replies, who knows allergies and medical histories, while Jim lays back, tired and resigned, like the child he is. It is abruptly, starkly obvious that Jim Kirk has no one else in the world but Spock. There is a part of Sarek which rejects that. His 14-year-old son is not prepared mentally to be anyone's touchstone. There is another part which understands why Spock has always been so desperate when it comes to Jim Kirk. They have always assumed that it is because Jim manipulates him, toys with him and pushes him so off balance that the only thing that seems right is Jim. But that is not it, Sarek thinks. That is not all that it is. Spock is intelligent and observant, and would not have missed the wild imbalance in their relationship. Sarek exhales slowly, looking down at the tablet Tanya holds out to him, an emergency meeting with the Federation president at 1900. He nods to her, and she gets up to make a call. Perhaps removing Spock will be for the best. They will have to ensure that Jim is stabilized, in so much as they can. But after, it might be the best thing to do. Spock, Sarek knows, is already angling to get Christopher Pike temporary guardianship of Jim, and he will be successful. Of that, Sarek has no doubt. Jim needs someone else in his life to rely on, multiple someones. Spock will not thank him for it, but that does not make this the wrong decision. Sarek stands and nods to the doctor handling Jim's case. Tanya looks up as he exits the wing. Contact Captain Christopher Pike, Sarek says. I would speak with him. She nods, and he follows her into the car waiting for them. He will have to speak to Amanda, and then explain to Pike what Spock is truly doing. And then they will have to trust that Jim Kirk has the will to survive. Chapter 8. When Spock had been young, he had been witness to countless arguments between his parents and Sybok. They had echoed throughout the house, his mother's voice rising and falling, matching and overtaking Sybok's, while his father had supplied the punctuation. Sybok had been their troubled child, was the one Spock thought they expected to worry about. Sometimes he wondered if his own, smaller rebellions were more of a betrayal. Even if they would not voice the thought, they had hoped Spock would be an easier child to raise. He thought he had been, as he had only run away the single time, and had had every intention of returning. He had not antagonized anyone, and he did well in school. But for all the conflicts he had had with his parents, he had truly only ever been held accountable by his mother. Even when Spock had fled to Riverside, his father had not disciplined him, not in the way he might have done Cybok. Spock expected it had something to do with the perceived emotionality of his attachment to Jim. His father judged that his mother would be better suited to understand and guide Spock. Apparently that was going to change. Cybok and his mother were both conspicuously absent from the house, murmuring something about going to Shikar to make sure the house was properly stocked, leaving Spock and Sarek alone. Spock had not realized, which he could not be blamed for. Jim would have noticed, but Jim was a suspicious creature, and Spock was not. So Spock had gone to his room, which seemed unfamiliar, even though he had been gone 3 months. 3 months, how was that all? How could that possibly have been all it was? He turned all of his computers on methodically, and then his holo, and it was only when he turned to perhaps go get a snack that he realized his father was standing in his doorway, silent and watchful. "Spock, your mother is concerned," Sarek said. And Spock thought sometimes that Vulcan syntax and speech patterns lent themselves to restating the obvious with startling frequency, juxtaposed with standard or English. Perhaps he would write a paper, or ask Amanda. She would have insight after her work on the Universal Translator. "She has expressed those concerns to me already," Spock told his father. "Unless you have concerns of your own to contribute," and that was a segue. He winced internally. That was too human. He would have to curb that before returning to school. "Spock, how often do you speak for him?" Spock felt his lips twitching towards a frown, and schooled his features quickly, still thrown by the question. How frequently did he speak for Jim? Rarely, he thought, and only when Jim was refusing to speak. Jim was more than capable of advocating for himself, and did so. Except, that was untrue. Jim rarely advocated for himself. Jim had long ago decided that actions were better than words, or had been taught that silences and defiance were better options to attempting to rationalize and converse with the world that did not want to hear him anyway. "I do not understand," Spock began, only to be interrupted again. "It is an admirable thing you have done," his father said, stepping into Spock's room and looking out the south-facing window. "To give him a family, a support system. He was very alone. It was astute to recognize that you could not be everything." Spock bit back the obvious, which is that he could have been everything, if they had stayed on Earth. Pike was a contingency plan that was made necessary by Sarek and Amanda's own actions, and Spock's status as a minor. If there had been a possibility of keeping Jim safe, Spock would have done it. But Tarsus IV had proven that Spock would not always be able to be there, that until Spock was 18, other people were necessary. "Ah," Sarek said, in a tone that meant he was both amused and disappointed. But perhaps it was not so admirable. Spock looked at his father, the worn, severe lines of his face, and wondered how, in some way, his father did not understand him, could not see in Spock's devotion to Jim his own devotion to Amanda. Sarek had met and married Amanda in a year's time, a thing that had never been done. Vulcans and humans had in the past entertained romantic relationships, but to Spock's knowledge, none before his parents had attempted it successfully. Vulcan courtships lasted decades, one marriage was the end result, and yet his father had flouted all tradition in order to marry Amanda. Spock was merely insisting on a friendship. He did not see why he should be vilified for it. Even more worryingly, he was uncertain what his father was getting at, and it was starting to remember that his father was not only powerful, but vastly, wildly intelligent. Spock had never been on the receiving end of his father's attention like this. He found he did not care for it. "You have always been a child of two worlds," Sarek said, watching him steadily. "You have always had great potential, and have made a way for yourself." "That is untrue," Spock said. The floor was smooth and glowed dully in the late afternoon light. It would be warm if he put his bare feet on it, unlike all Earth's surfaces, where all floors were chill to the touch. Spock wondered what that was that made it so. "Explain," Sarek said, and sat in the chair across from Spock's bed. Spock did not want to explain. It was humiliating and private to explain all the ways in which he had not made a way for himself. He had found his way by following Jim, and taken his cues from Jim always. "On Earth, I was very alone," Spock said, slow and careful. He had to find the right way to word it, so that Sarek would understand and not damn Jim. His father was, He might understand. Spock was surprised by how desperately he wanted Sarek to understand. He gave me a place to sit and someone to. Our schools are very social, and it is difficult to be an outsider in that setting. He ensured you were not. Spock had been so alone, uncertain and afraid, even. And Jim had been frustrating and wonderful, and had deftly maneuvered Spock from his loneliness, taught by example how to find someone and hold on to them when there was no compelling reason to do so, save for wanting to. Jim had saved Spock long before Spock thought to save Jim. Jim had been a cruel child and was a cruel adolescent, but he had found Spock and kept him when no one else did, when no one else wanted to. He had trusted Spock with his secrets and held on to the one Spock gave him, and Spock knew that he was different because of Jim, that there was a plan for his life that no longer fit, because Spock was not the Vulcan-committed boy he had been before leaving for Earth. He was, as T'Pring insisted, something different. Spock thought that acknowledging that would have been a lifelong struggle if not for Jim, who made the issue irrelevant. Yes, Spock agreed, consciously keeping his shoulders loose, his posture correct and non-aggressive. I was lonely and afraid, and he provided me a safe harbor. I met Jim, and I was no longer alone. He is strong, then. Yes. Perhaps now you must trust that he is strong enough to save himself. You have given him people who want to help him if he will let them. Whatever your motivations for that, Spock, you should trust your instinct that it was the right thing to do. Spock stared after him and felt gutted. Jim was. Sybok says there is no such thing as T'Hyla, he found himself saying, and Sarek turned, his hand on Spock's doorframe. Spock wishes he could take that back, but he could not hold it all. He had kissed Jim, and now Jim was light years away, and Spock was alone, felt alone for the first time in almost a decade. Sybok does not know everything, Sarek said, though he was fond, a warmth in his voice. Sybok believes that the concept is rooted in repression and shame. You do not? I married your mother. The silence that fell then was thick and heavy, as though Sarek wanted Spock to understand something, or to confess something, and Spock already felt he had laid himself too bare as it was. His father reached out after a moment, and touched Spock's cheek. I am, and always shall be proud of you, Sarek said. You are my son. Spock stared at his father's retreating back, and sat on the bed, still and quiet for a long time. He knew he had only to reach out for T'Pring or Ston, or even Sybok, but it was not the same. I am lonely, he sent Jim, laying on his back. Yeah. Sarek and Sybok returned to Earth after a week, and Spock went back to school, and it was all very civil. Ston filled him in quietly on everything he had missed, and T'Pring stared at him, hard, before turning away. She was doing her hair differently, piling it up in intricate knots, and her school uniform was no match for the way she held herself. Someday, T'Pring would be the best of them all. Spock went to classes, and he came home, and Amanda worked on the Universal Translator. Spock did well, and it was all familiar, which was good, except that it was providing him time to think. Having time to think was rarely a good thing, but now Spock had kissed his best friend, and he had nothing to distract him from that. The worst of it, the thing that had him laying on his back, staring blankly at the ceiling, was that when Spock had thought of his relationship with Jim and its future, he had never imagined it in a romantic context. He had written the words of their future, and they had been brothers all their days, a sometimes ill-matched duo making their way through space, catching each other's rough edges, but fitting together better than anyone else ever would. He had thought that he would return to Earth and go to Starfleet Academy. It would put him in closer proximity to Jim, whose future had always been a little less well-determined. But Spock had thought that it would likely only take him a semester to get Jim's life in order, and Winona and George Kirk's child was guaranteed acceptance to the Academy. They would go to the Academy, Spock in a Science Corp track, and Jim in engineering. Perhaps, Spock knew Jim had a talent for language, but his tact made communication an unlikely fit. They would obtain the same assignment, and whatever came, it would be theirs to figure out together. The truth was that Spock had not seen the kiss coming, but now he didn't know how he hadn't, because it seemed so obvious. He wondered if this was what had his parents nervous, if they had been obvious to everyone but themselves. And Spock didn't know if Jim had seen it coming, or if Jem had been deferring to Spock in that. He was supposed to be clever, and this was absurd, since he had done the kissing. He had serious doubts about his intelligence. Serious, serious doubts. His pad pinged, and Spock picked it up idly, while Ston and Dupring bickered at each other across the table. The image was Jim, shirt lifted and pants slouched far too low on his hips, so low it seemed they must fall off, torso laid bare, pouting absurdly at the camera. Vulcan pornography was almost exclusively written, which made Jim's image far more tantalizing. Spock's mouth went dry. "Oh," Dupring said, "that is what he looks like." Spock hastily closed the image and looked at her amused face. "He looks different when he is not emaciated," she said. "One reels at the thought," Ston said, and Dupring waved a hand at him. "When will we meet him?" she asked. "How do I say this diplomatically?" Spock mused, lifting an eyebrow at her as he sent a message to Jim. "That was extremely inappropriate. That's kind of the point, Spock." Spock narrowed his eyes at the winky face. Jim was laughing at him. Spock knew it, and he couldn't berate him further, because if Jim knew Dupring had seen it, he would not be ashamed. He would think it was hilarious. "Never?" Ston suggested. "Never," Spock agreed, looking back up, and Dupring shook her head at both of them. "Absurd. One might think you'd be ashamed of him." "One would suppose incorrectly," Spock told her icily, and she nodded. "Good. That is as it should be, then." He watched her walk away, bemused. "What just happened?" he asked Ston. "You are protective, and that is not a common facet of relationships between Vulcans," Ston said, "and Dupring is a traditionalist." "She is not," Spock said. "In some ways, she is intensely conservative," Ston said. His cheeks were tinged a vague green. "But you are a friend, and she... we would hate to think less of you." "The fact that the object of my affections is human..." "Your mother is human," Ston said, picking up his pad and standing as the chimes rang for classes to resume. "And you are half-human. In this, you are granted more freedom than Dupring or I might be." "The expectations are lower," Spock surmised, and Ston inclined his head as they fell into step. "I did not say that the reasons were flattering to you, though I had not thought you to hold the opinion of others in such high esteem." "Others, no. Dupring, yes. It is important to me." "Yes," Ston agreed. "It is fortunate her logic lies with you." It was a strange thing. On Earth, Spock's world had narrowed down to Jim and only Jim. But here he had people whose opinions did matter. He had friends. Not many, but Ston and Dupring were enough. He felt as though he was living two separate lives. But Tarsus had blurred the lines, and Jim's persistence in sending Spock flirtatious, or explicit, messages and photos while he was in school involved Spock's friends in his relationship with Jim. Which was to say that it was not terrifying. Sometimes Spock thought he had the worst timing of anyone in the entire galaxy. Jim's stability with Pike was brand new, in its infancy yet, and wildly untested. For Pike, Jim was still a novelty, and Jim was still regaining the footing he had lost on Tarsus IV. And Spock, well, Spock expected that he would get at least one emergency call. It was too new to be counted on, and Spock had to consider all the variables of this new facet of their relationship. "I wonder," Dupring said one day, as they studied after school, "if those images could be construed as child pornography." Spock stared at her. He was going to have to buy his own communications package, because Jim would only escalate. Or Spock would. Spock would not pretend, even to himself, that this was something he was being reluctantly led into. One of them would escalate, and Spock did not want his parents peering into his usage summary and seeing any of it. It was likely bad enough as it was. Spock got a communications package through an Orion provider, because they had bigger problems than two sexually frustrated teenagers. He kept the original for family and his friends, and the second was for Jim. "Use this and only this when you are harassing me. I'm totally your dirty little secret right now. Do you want my parents calling the police and alerting them to the nature of the images you've been sending? Yeah, like your messages aren't any less explicit." Spock called him. Some conversations needed to be had out loud. "You are the bane of my existence," he said, settling on his bed and stretching out. His mother was at a seminar for the next 2 days, and Spock had tomorrow free. It was luxury at its finest. "You know, it's like 4 in the morning here, right?" Jim yawned. And yes, Spock did know. It was called tactical advantage, and he would take what he could get with Jim. Also, I'm hot. Don't lie. Spock opened the photo up again as he laid on his bed, sliding a hand down his stomach. It is a flattering photo. This one wasn't ridiculously posed and was taken by someone else. It was at school, and Jim had a foil and was laughing, a bruise on his arm indicating he'd lost the match. He was shirtless, and there was a fine sheen of sweat, but he'd cut his hair and he was. Well, he was a cock tease. Did you open it at school? Jim sounded far too gleeful not to have known that was precisely what Spock was going to do. To bring censor compliments, as always, Spock said, his hand sliding lower under his pants. He was half hard already from looking at the stupid photo, and now Jim's voice was in his ear. Ston wishes you would confine yourself. You don't have to open them, Jim laughed, and his voice was thick and low, and Spock wanted him so badly. For Jim's 15th birthday, Spock had sent him a crate of Vulcan tea and deliberately ignored the link Jim had sent him. Apparently, there were places one could go to get a custom-made dildo replica of one's dick. Spock had a shady communications package and a tendency to jerk off to terrible duck-faced images of Jim. He was not going to test the limits of the law by ordering a replica of his underage dick and sending it to his equally underage boyfriend. There were limits. What were you doing? Oh, the pic? Ugh. Sulu thinks that he's some kind of, martial arts master. There's a pause. I mean, he's not wrong, but I can't tell him that. Obviously, Spock agreed, stroking himself lazily. Anyway, Scotty took the picture. You remember Scotty? The Scottish one whose last name is actually Scott? He's made a new camera he thinks is the shit. I think he's just biding his time because he hacked the Enterprise's specs and. Oh, Jim groans. Spock, she's beautiful. You should see the ship they're building. She's going to be the flagship, and her warp drive is off the fucking charts. Spock wondered what it says about him that he's sexually attracted to someone who's sexually attracted to a ship. I mean, I was growing up under her, you know, but she never looked like much. But are you jerking it out? Attempting to. Want me to talk about something else? Jim asked, and then without waiting for Spock's reply. So I got a vibe for my birthday, and since Pike's at this conference, and number one is on again with Snow, I thought I'd break it in. Oh. Spock was proud of the way his voice did not break, but he knew how close it was. As it was, his dick was leaking, mixed with lubricant and making slick sounds as his hand pumped up and down. He squeezed the base of his dick, a warning to his body. It would be useless. When Jim was like this, Spock was doomed. It was kind of weird trying to get myself that open, you know. I don't think I'm flexible enough. Maybe I should go do a yoga class. But I got the bed just fucking drenched with lube, kept on working it, and then it went in, and fuck, Spock. Felt so full, like I was gonna come apart. I bet your dick is bigger than that. That's all I kept thinking about, how big it felt inside me, how deep it felt like it was going, and about how you're gonna feel even better. You'll be able to fill me up and fuck me until I scream, and then maybe you'll play with it after. Do you think you will? Finger me when I'm still sore from you fucking me? I'd let you. Let you put your fingers in me and keep me open so you could slide back in when you were hard again. Jim, Spock manages, strangled, because he could see it, the way Jim would be loose-limbed, sprawling and pliant, and letting Spock do what he wanted to do to Jim's body. He was making a mess of his hand now, pre-cum dripping everywhere, his balls tight. This was torture. It all was. Unfair that Jim was so uninhibited, wanton and hungry and unashamed. Spock let Jim do the talking, spent too many daylight hours agonizing over every one of these calls. But none of it ever mattered in the moment. In the moment, all Spock wanted was for Jim to keep talking, to hear his breathing change, and the little sounds he made while he fucked into his fist. God, I'm still loose, Jim groaned, and Spock closed his eyes, picturing Jim reaching behind himself to feel fingers tracing the rim of his hole, a finger sliding into the first knuckle easily. If you were here, you could slip right back in. If Sulu wasn't coming over for a run in, Christ, fuck, 3 hours, I'd put it back in. We should plan it. I'll do it for you on a vid, so you can see and pretend it's you. You're going to kill me, Spock managed. Not yet, Jim said, and Spock choked and came, his whole body tensing and hips jerking, seeking. Fuck, you have no idea. No idea how you sound, Jim groaned. So hot. Shit, I'm gonna. Spock! Come for me, Spock said, voice low and hoarse. and before he had a moment to second-guess himself, his phrasing, any of it, Jim was shouting, sounding wrecked as he came. "I think that's the best we've done yet," Jim decided after a couple of minutes, where Spock found the strength to get up and clean himself, changing into a casual robe. "It was satisfactory," Spock agreed, and Jim laughed at him. "Such an asshole," he said. He didn't say anything else, falling asleep easily, but Spock kept the line open, listening to Jim snore lightly and laying on his bed. He could almost pretend that if he reached a hand out, Jim would be there beside him. Almost. Chapter 9, Number 1 Interlude. She didn't actually want to work with Chris Pike. He'd written a dissertation and was clearly in love with the subject matter, the exo and brief captain of the Kelvin, George Kirk. She'd read the dissertation and gone to a lot of the hearings and was pretty sure that Chris Pike was going to fail out of Starfleet at the last minute and run off to try and convince Winona Kirk to let him raise her babies. The whole Kelvin thing had been interesting to watch, from a bureaucratic point of view. Once you got past the fact that people they'd all known, or known of, were dead, it was kind of fascinating to see how Starfleet tried to find the most expedient, convenient theory. If she'd known him better, she would have seen that the face Pike had made when the official line was space anomaly meant that he was going to be a pain in the ass from that point out. As it was, she'd just chalked it up to a bitch face and gone about her life. She hadn't seen him for another 5 years, and barely recognized his name when she got assigned to his second tour as a captain of his own vessel, which was a fucking shit show. The CMO didn't stay in sick bay. Everyone seemed to be a functional alcoholic, and Pike was weirdly, bizarrely, puritanical, while still managing to fuck everything capable of enthusiastic consent. The first 2 months had been fucking terrible. It got better after that, because she lost her temper and punched him in the head, and submitted her application for transfer. When he'd regained consciousness, he had overridden the controls to her room, and they'd yelled at each other for hours, and nothing had been resolved until the next mission, when he'd been kicked by aliens who wanted him to mate with some woman as though they were an endangered species. She had clenched her teeth together. Humans weren't an endangered fucking species. Not like her own people. And they'd asked her if she wanted him, wanted to fuck him, and she had stared at them, incredulous, because this was a species meant to be highly advanced, and all they wanted was porn? It was possible to say she lost her shit. Later, after the firefight, but before they got beamed back up, he pressed gauze against her thigh, eyebrows knit together. I know you're not happy here, but... If I was going to enter into the world of adult entertainment, she mused, because she wasn't having this conversation. There were too many feelings in this conversation. I think I would be a very expensive porn star. He stared at her, and she lifted her eyebrows back and said, "Do you really want to be an Orion slaver?" He blushed a brilliant, brilliant red and covered his face with his hands, which were smeared with her blood. "Because I get it if it's a fantasy. Your kinks aren't your politics, you know. But if that is your politics, we're going to have a lot of issues. The last 5 months are going to look like a cakewalk, okay?" "Jesus, Number One!" he shouted, mortified. It's a kink, okay?" "Sure," she agreed, leaning back and closing her eyes. They'd saved the day, and soon the ship would beam them back up, and maybe they could make this whole thing work. "It's cool. Sometimes I get off to the idea of getting gang raped. Dicks everywhere, you know, and nothing you can do about it but take it." He made a brilliant choking noise, and she patted his hand soothingly, weirdly prudish. After that, she figures they bonded over terrible sexual fantasies and lines of professionalism being crossed. The thing about Jim Kirk is, she gets it. She gets what it's like to feel being seen as a dangerous thing. She gets that despite what the Vulcan kid thinks he understands. He has no idea what it's like to feel like every single person in your life has the potential to turn into a hostile. No fucking idea. She gets it. She's the queen of getting it. She survived Illyria. She and Chris Pike still fight about how she's one person in private and another person in public, and how he gets whiplash between the two of them. He gets now that it's born of survival technique, and he tries to be understanding of it, but sometimes he loses his shit, and she has to beat his fucking head in. That said, when the Vulcan kid browbeat Chris into an adoption, and she had laughed herself sick about that, Chris had wandered around his house aimlessly while she sat on the stairs drinking a beer. "Winona Kirk's kid won. The hell am I going to do? Do you remember Winona Kirk?" he asked, And she sighs and goes to the hardware store down the street and installs a doorknob that locks on the inside. Then she melts down the keys and puts it under the kid's pillow, because clearly she's going soft. "I'm not going to," Chris says, awkward and shifting his weight back and forth, the way he does when he's on the bridge, and knows she's about to throw down some actual bullshit command he's going to make. Seriously, they need a less Terran-driven model at the Academy, because fucking Terrans. But she gets it, kind of, the implicit accusation that he would do something, if not for the door. But she thinks that Chris gets that as well as anyone who grew up in a functional home can, because he sees the scars of it on her. Everyone needs an anchor, and it's supposed to be parent, but some of them don't have that luxury. Chris is her person. She's still not 100% on how that happened, but he is. Spock is Jim's, and she can come over and hide when her apartment feels too big and empty, and she thinks she can hear footsteps or a transporter hum. When her nightmares feel the shadows and there's nowhere to run but away, she can do that because her person is less than a mile away, and she can run there if she needs to. Needs to, wants to, is hiding from the person in her bed who she has no real memory of except nice teeth. "This is one of those scenarios where actions are going to speak louder than words," she says, and then makes him take her out to dinner at one of those food truck things, where he complains about all the illnesses they're inevitably going to get. Spock is going back to Vulcan. Anyone with eyes can see that Ambassador Sarek and Dr. Grayson are only staying because Jim's been abused, and because they're not convinced that if they left now, their son wouldn't find a way to escape. For a while, Spock will stay, and Jim will have his anchor and feel like the world is something that can be managed. But then Spock will leave, and so this place will have to be sufficient. And they have a lot, a fucking lot, of conversations about how Chris isn't being blamed for whatever has happened in Jim's life, but that he is going to be guilty until proven innocent. He's going to have to prove he won't hit the kid, that he won't ignore him or scream at him or blame him for things that a child has no control over. She has to tell stories she hasn't even thought of in a long time, and Chris gets that gut-punched look he gets, sometimes, when he realizes how bad it was in Illyria. It's gut-punched and laced with murder, which is why she likes him, because Chris Pike is a good, steady man, but then sometimes he's really not. "It's going to be a shit show," she says, watching Jim Kirk struggle in his sleep in the hospital. Spock reaches out and presses a hand over Jim's, dark green bruises under his eyes. "Yeah, you're fucking moving in," he replies. "And fine. That seems fair-ish." She doesn't move in. Not any more than she already is. The ship is going down. She's going to run out of breathable air, and her corpse is going to float, bumping off of walls and ceilings until the ship explodes or something intercepts it. This is such bullshit. "Were you an actress or something on Illyria?" Jim asks, side-eyeing her. She glances over him, and he shuts off the game. Someday she'll tell him about it, when he's ready to ask. He started to, a couple of times, but kids like them recognize their own, and it's hard to take on someone else's hurt when you're only just coping with your own. "Don't answer that," Chris calls from the kitchen. "Not professionally," she says, grinning at Jim with too many teeth. Jim rolls her eyes at her, jumping over the back of the couch. She follows by going around, mostly because once a 16-year-old boy has done something, it's no longer satisfying. "What's dinner?" he asks. "Stir fry," Chris decides, pulling his head out of the refrigerator. She smiles and rolls his eyes at her. His ass is really nice in those jeans, and he knows it. "Grab a knife, kid." It's been about 2 years and change. Jim is 16 now, almost as tall as Chris, and grown into the sharp lines of his jaw. His lips are still too big, and his hair is, frankly, a disaster, but he shares space easily enough, not like he has something to prove. Crystal has a policy of letting Jim come to him, rather than reaching out for affection, and the locked door still hurt, sometimes, but now he understands not to take it personally. Jim is at the top of his class in spite of himself, and sometimes catches himself talking about the ethics of deep space exploration. He pulls amazing faces and then hides in his room, probably sexting his boyfriend. He is, in spite of himself, all right. "No," Chris says. "It's Vulcan. What trouble is he going to get into on Vulcan?" she demands, bored. Jim is out, because it's Friday night. She was going to go out. She was going to drag him out. But apparently that's not going to happen, because he's a moron. "Have you met Jim?" he demands. "And look, Spock would be fine. That would be fine. It's not Vulcan, and it's not Spock, and it's not you." "Obviously," she snorts, and then shifts, looking up at him. He looks down, hands hovering, uncomfortable. He doesn't like when she does this, puts her head in his lap, laying on the couch like they're a couple. It's not that, actually. Not that he doesn't like it, she means. He does. He just doesn't like that he likes it, and doesn't like that she won't pretend to be bothered by whatever stupid Terran version of propriety he has in his head. Spock's parents are. Chris starts, and then stops again, weighing the words carefully. They're good people, good parents. I owe Ambassador Sarek for pulling the strings that got us custody of Jim. I just don't think that. Jim is good right now. He sounds frustrated, the thwarted rage he gets in his voice when he's talking about Jim. He's so protective of every little hint of progress in Jim, has sat in meetings at school and argued himself to distraction. He's so terrified that he'll see the boy who didn't know how to navigate anything without Spock. Which is fair. Jim had been. It had been really rough. He had been untethered, had flinched and gone quiet, and then been abruptly angry, striking out at everything. He had done everything he could think of to make sure they were watching, and then hurled abuse at them for watching. There were days when Chris had only barely scraped by, had sobbed into her shoulder, and she had tried to comfort him. She didn't know how to say that it was fine, that he wasn't hurting himself, and every time this happened, Chris was proving he wasn't frank. I made it, she said. I made it, and so will he. She doesn't blame Chris for wanting to protect him from this. Dr. Grayson is too clever not to see exactly how wrapped up in Jim her son was. But that knife cut both ways, and Jim is out on a Friday night, but he'll come home by curfew and call Spock. He is, she says now. He's good, and he needs this. The playing field is even now, or it's more even than it was. Jim isn't helpless, hiding in Spock's shadow, because he doesn't want anyone to see him. He's not that boy. He's something new, something better. And they need to see if they still fit together, the way she needs to make sure she and Chris still align when she goes off for a short tour. I'm taking him to Vulcan, she says. It's for a month, not the end of the world. You don't know that, he mutters. And she wonders if he knows his hand is in her hair. She wonders if he's ever going to admit he wants her. What's not the end of the world? Jim asks, tossing his keys on the counter and making a face at them. Are you guys, like, together or what? We're going to Vulcan, end of next week, she says, and watches the way he shifts. He tenses like he's waiting for the punchline, trying so hard to be calm, nonchalant, and failing spectacularly, the way only a 16-year-old can. Yeah? He asks Chris, who tugs her hair, petty and spiteful. Yeah, for a month, Chris relents, and she smiles at the ceiling. At least Vulcan won't be boring. Chapter 10. Jim told him he was coming to Vulcan for a month, 2 months ahead of time. 2 weeks prior to Jim's arrival, Spock had yet to tell his mother. It was not that he was uncertain as how to tell her, nor was it that their relationship was so fraught he felt he could not speak to her. It was, they had an understanding, an easy rhythm to their lives, just the two of them sharing the house while Sarek and Sybok coexisted on Earth. A large part of that, Spock knew, was due to the fact that Jim was absent, and that Spock kept him absent. So it was a strange thing, finding the words, the timing, the courage. He had to tell her Jim was coming, though he should not tell her. He should ask, and not make it appear that he was dictating. But if he asked, and she refused, then they would be back to the last time Jim was in his mother's life, and she and Spock had been distant to each other, and Spock was 17 now, almost 18. You might as well say something, Amanda said, and he startled badly. She laughed a little, tucking her hair behind her ear and rooting through the refrigerator. She was not even looking at him, seated as he was at the counter. I thought we had more of a sketh, she said, distracted. I had it for lunch, he said, putting down his pad after a last, lingering glance at the photo Jim had sent him of a space dock. Spock had not been able to properly appreciate it last time he had been, as he had been otherwise distracted by stupid people. We could have stir-fry. We had that last night, she sighed, and proceeded to stare into the refrigerator as though it would reveal its secrets if only she lingered long enough. We've had that a lot. It's time to accept we might be boring, Spock. What are you going to eat when I'm gone for weeks? We're going to have to go shopping. Number one is coming to Vulcan for the conference, Spock said, and he did not pick at his cuticles, or smooth his hand over his thighs, or speak too quickly. He very pointedly did not do any of those things, which he reflected might have been worse than doing them, or at least as bad. Jim said she offered to bring him, and he accepted. Oh, she's coming to the translator conference? Amanda asked. She gave up on the refrigerator and went to the bread box, pulling out a loaf of rich, honey-made bread they had bought the previous weekend. That's good. I like when she's there. It adds an air of, what's a nice way to say that she always seems like she's actually 2 seconds away from killing people, but in a really sociopathic way that even Vulcans can't really handle. That doesn't translate to polite, Spock told her, after considering, and she pulled a face but nodded. I wondered how you would feel about Jim visiting for part of this day. Amanda paused, and Spock tried to read the set of her shoulders, the line of her back, but he could not. She pulled out a knife and began slicing the bread. Start making the garlic dip, she said. You know I'm presenting at this conference. Yes, Spock said. Perhaps he could go with her to the conference. He and Jim could stay in the hotel while Number One and Amanda gave presentations. It was not ideal, but it would be, well, terrible. Amanda hummed under her breath, and then put down the knife, leaning her back against the counter. The light in the kitchen was a rich reddish gold, and she looked young just then. His mother always seemed ageless, but now, in this moment, she seemed young. I don't want to say no, she said after a moment's consideration. I want to tell you that he can stay here, with you, while I'm at the conference. I feel like we're in a better place. I feel like you're in a better place, and Jim has to be. On the other hand, I'm not wild about leaving you two unsupervised for a month, especially since it's just the start of summer vacation for you. Spock stayed quiet. There were so many things he could say, and almost all of them would result in her saying no. She sighed. Let me talk to Captain Pike. It was not a no. He had to hold on to that fact that she hadn't said no. When he excused himself from dinner, he had a list of missed messages. Your mom just called Pike, and now he's uber pissed at Number One. How big is your bed? Do Vulcans sleep on wood, Spock? These are important things to know. Do I need to bring lube? Oh my god. Dude, what if you got ugly, Spock? I can't handle you, ugly. Lie to me. I've been giving it careful thought, and I want your dick in me. I have to shower. I don't understand why you're never around. Spock, I just took a shower and I had my fingers in my ass and this dildo, and 2 weeks is a really long time. Spock, I came so hard I think I passed out. And I was thinking of you. Spock made a face at his pad. This, he thought, was the worst part of being apart, and called Jim.
Hey,
Jim said. Just audio, no visual. Spock locked his door hastily, engaging the headset. Jim?
Is your dick double-ridged?
Jim asked. What? Spock reminded himself to tread with care. Last time Jim had questions about Vulcan anatomy, Spock had wound up fingering himself and taking a poorly lit shot of his asshole.
I mean, you never send me dick pics, so I was thinking, ridges? Maybe a flower? Oh shit, Spock. Do you have, like, a Venus flytrap down there? Spock, if you don't have something capable of fucking me, I'm going to be so disappointed.
This led to Spock taking a picture of his dick and sending it to Jim, who wanted to know if it tasted like wintergreen or spearmint or sour apple, and Spock coming so hard he strained something.
Hey, Spock,
Jim said lazily when Spock's breathing had returned to a more regulated state. Yes?
2 weeks and you can actually fuck me.
He hung up then, because all other things being equal, Jim Kirk was a complete asshole. Jim was going to stay with them in a guest room. He was going to arrive in the evening on Spock's final day of the semester, and he would stay with Spock while Number One, or as Spock was baffled to find, Yuri Vulosobihan de Daiskofi of the Illyri Sector Wars, attended the conference with Spock's mother. Spock had reviewed the timetable with Jim, with Captain Pike, with Number One and with his parents. He felt confident that things would go well. Jim showed up at school. Spock reflected that he should have seen that coming. Jim liked to make an entrance, and he had been far, far too vague about when he was going to be able to meet up with Spock upon his arrival. Spock liked to think he would have sensed him, but really, he recognized the heated stirring and the way his classmates were drifting towards the entrance of the building, striving for some kind of nonchalance. T'Pring was parting them, moving the wrong way against the flow of students, and her left eyebrow was pointedly arched. Jim Kirk is here, T'Pring said, stopping in front of him. She glanced down in the pod where Stan was still finishing up the day's assignments, refusing to deviate. Failure to complete in a timely manner results in points off, she told him. Stan threw a stylus at T'Pring's head and reprimand for the interruption. She caught it without a look down and continued to stare expectantly at Spock. It was possible that allowing Jim this moment would be less humiliating than standing here with Stan and T'Pring. Possibly. Yes, Spock agreed. T'Pring looked at him expectantly, and Spock realized that he could not stay here and collect himself. He was going to have to go out there. When Spock had been young, before they'd moved to Earth, he'd asked his mother why she wore Vulcan styles when no one was ever going to be fooled into thinking she was Vulcan. She told him that she did not dress that way to pass as a Vulcan. She did it because she married a Vulcan and had two Vulcan sons, and she lived on their planet. And while it was Sarek's job to stop talking when she was trying to tweak the Universal Translator, it was her job to support him. "Only one of us has a very strong cultural identity linked to our job," she said, "and the gowns are very pretty and practical." What she hadn't said was that she was a target, an enormous banner of attention, and so that in whatever way she could deflect criticism from herself, from himself, or Sybok, or Sarek, she had. She could not be Vulcan, but she could respect that she had married into Vulcan society. His mother was a brilliant tactician. Spock had never learned the lessons, but perhaps because he was Vulcan, he always meant to feel the inverse. He wore Vulcan clothing when he had been young because he was Vulcan, inescapably so. Jim was inescapably human. He stood out among the sober garb of Spock's classmates, pale gold hair a shock amidst the sea of black. He was wearing a white t-shirt, soft and worn, and maybe just too small. His jeans were new, though, tapering over dust-covered Starfleet issue boots. His mother's rucksack was slung across one shoulder, Kirk W., still a shocking black against the faded olive. He was talking to a couple of Spock's classmates, grinning at them, pleased with himself and amused by them. He was perhaps worse than Sybok, Spock realized, fond. His classmates, however, were appalling. They touched his arms, his hair, and it was a blatant invasion. If Jim had not been someone who was already aware of the fact that Vulcans were touch telepaths, it would be a gross invasion of privacy. "He is very attractive," T'Pring mused from behind him. Spock glared at her, and she flicked her fingers at him dismissively. "Human is not sexually stimulating to me, even as a fetish," she dismissed, and then with remarkable tact for her added, "You are not in full control of your shields." Stav was leaning into Jim's space, and Jim was allowing it. Stav was attractive, tall, 2 years older than Spock, and had a reputation for being a skilled lover. Spock was going to kill him. "Shields," T'Pring repeated. "Although if you have to be emotionally compromised, there are worse things to be compromised for." Spock had excellent control. It was often remarked upon, scathing and resentful, but there, noted over and over again. He was a powerful telepath, and he had staggering control. That he should be so obviously compromised was untenable, and he was suddenly furious with Jim for putting him in this position. Spock had another year to live amongst these people, another year to endure their constant remarks about the inadequacy of his genetics, the flaws of his humanity, and Jim had come here as though to prove that Spock would never be Vulcan. Jim was here for the summer, and Spock could endure anything for Jim, could endure anything knowing that Jim was at his side, but he was going to be here alone, with these people, and Jim was going to leave again. Already Spock was too emotional for their tastes, though T'Pring's interpretation of him as not Vulcan seemed to be taking root and working in his favor. As he was not Vulcan, he could not be shamed for his emotionality, but their story might change if he were to be, if he were to smile. Or kill someone. Or smile and kill Stav. He was struck with the insane urge to flee. "He could not know," T'Pring said quietly at his side. "It is not logical to blame him for wanting to see you as badly as you wish to see him." "You were not meant to be on his side," Spock told her. She tilted his head. "Shields," she said firmly, and then glanced around. "Is he still not finished? How is this possible?" she demanded, and stormed back into the school, presumably to find Ston and to continue to be a terrible friend to Spock. When Spock was calm, he moved forward. Or rather, he tried to, but people refused to move once he got to a certain point. And so he stood outside the deepest cluster of them, arching an eyebrow at their backs. Finally, he sighed and said, "Jim." "Spock," Jim said, shoving his way through the crowd in a way Spock could not, careless and violent. "Surprise!" And just like that, Spock forgave him. It was achingly clear Jim had not done this to antagonize Spock, had not given a thought to the ramifications of this for Spock. Jim had done this because it had been years since they had stood in front of one another, and Jim had been unable to wait. Spock's fingers ached. He wanted to grab him, to take him away quickly, to not engage in this performance. Their friendship was not for these onlookers. It was for no one else, and certainly not before Spock had taken the time to know Jim again. It was one thing to text and call and video conference back and forth, but it was another to share the same space. The last time Spock had seen Jim, he had still been bruised and only barely healing, and Spock had not felt this out of place, this uncertain, since he was 7 and a strange boy had scaled his garden wall. "Commander Uravila Sabolan did not require you into the evening?" he asked, focusing on his shields, on keeping his features clean and his body language appropriate. "Who?" Jim asked, frowning and adjusting the bag on his shoulder, his hip jutting just enough for his shirt to ride up, exposing the smooth skin tight over a hip bone. It was all violently unfair. "Number one," Spock clarified, lifting an eyebrow at him. "Oh, yeah, no, she pretty much ditched me," Jim said, easy. "Her meeting got moved up or something. You're done, right?" "Yes," Spock said, beginning to walk towards the transporter building. "Coming?" Jim fell into an easy step beside him. "Not yet," he said, and Spock did not need to look at him to know the shape of his smile. "But I have high hopes." Spock did not hit him, but it was a very, very close thing. The journey to Spock's home was oddly strained. Spock was out of the habit of filling silences, and Jim was clearly refusing to speak. Spock tried to articulate to himself all the ways in which Jim was different. His hair was darker, but his eyes were bluer somehow. The cut of his jaw was hardening, and the scars along his cheek from the time he had jumped from the car had almost vanished. He had grown into his nose, and the growth spurt had arrived at last. They were very nearly of a height, though Spock remained taller, and if he felt some satisfaction at that, he would naturally deny it. "How pissed is your mom about this?" Jim asked abruptly as they stepped off the shuttle. The final mile to the house was on foot, though there was a cruiser that could be used. He would use it if his mother ever remembered to leave it in the garage. "She is supportive," Spock said, blinking as his eyes adjusted to the sun. Jim slid on sunglasses. "Yeah," he snorted. "She does not, perhaps, anticipate the extent to which I have planned to have you," Spock allowed, because part of the artful deception he had maintained was that he and Jim were simply codependent friends. Perhaps more. Perhaps. But it would all be new. If she knew Spock had sent Jim a dick pic, she would not have let them stay alone. "You're such an asshole," Jim said, and Spock caught him by the wrist, easy and familiar, like a song he had known from childhood. It might have been years since he had last heard it, but he would always know all the words. Knowing Jim was like that, comforting and intimate. Now Jim came to him easily, pressing against him, letting Spock pull him close, tilted his face up the scant inches for Spock to kiss him. He wanted to do it now, kiss him hello before they saw Amanda, before they crossed the threshold of his parents' house. Jim's fingers trailed across his, and it felt as though all of Spock's nerve endings had lit up, were singing under the attention. He pulled Jim in, one hand around his waist and the other at the nape of his neck, Jim's hand on his back. It had been 2 years since their last kiss. It scarcely mattered. His mother was gone already, had left a message as she was packing about how she hadn't gone grocery shopping because maybe Jim would want to see what that looked like on Vulcan, how bizarre it was to shop somewhere where no one ever listed prices. Where was the other shoe? Did she pack her itinerary already? Remember to call Sarek. No wild parties. Well, Sybok might encourage that, and who had the patience for it? Sybok listened to the entire thing, because his mother liked to do that, set her phone recording and walk around the house, narrating whatever she was doing as much as she was talking to him, and she'd been known to stick important things at the very end to ensure they listened. He had been trained young. Still, it was strange to listen to his mother's disembodied voice with Jim right there, lips red and slightly swollen from their kiss, and so Spock watched the recorder, because it was easier. Jim was leaning against the counter when Spock hit the end button, and the smile he gave Spock was small, strangely restrained. It was unfamiliar, a blatant, snarling reminder of how long it had really been. "What?" Spock asked, something tight in his stomach. And then the smile shifted, twisted into something brighter, wicked, briefly hidden as Jim stripped off his shirt and cocked his hips. "So, where's your room?" Spock felt like he was losing patches of time. Every third step, maybe. He was irrationally frustrated by that. He wanted to remember this, wanted it pressed in vivid detail into his memory. Jim's mouth was cool against his, ambient temperature of humans lower than Vulcan's, lower than Spock's, which ran still higher. Their teeth clacked together, 2 years out of practice, and moving, moving. Spock pushing Jim down the hall, through his bedroom door. Jim laughed when Spock pushed him up against the door, unbuttoning his jeans. No, wait, do you? Come on, you've got like a fucking billion layers on, and I've just got jeans and socks and boxers. Dude, get naked, Jim said breathless, and Spock pulled off his tunic, his shirt and his boots, hopped out of his trousers. Fuck your asses. I kind of want to eat your ass, which is weird. Watching it in porn, you're like, yeah, I could do that. But then you think maybe in actual practice, you'd be a little bit. He broke off, because Spock kissed him again, swallowing the rest of that horrifying sentence. It was heady to grind his hips against Jim's, to feel their cocks sliding against each other, to have the expanse of smooth skin against his. No Venus dick trap, huh? Jim murmured at one point, but Spock dismissed it because there was only so much attention he could devote to Jim's insanity over the more pressing matters of having sex right now. They made it to the bed, Spock falling with Jim on top of him, laughing and pressing stinging, biting kisses to Spock's neck, his clavicle, the line of his jaw. When they had been young, almost a decade ago now, they had wrestled a lot. It was difficult now, with Jim above him, red-cheeked and panting, not to remember that, not to remember the boy who had only looked less unhappy when he was sitting the victor on Spock's ribs. Jim was so much better now, and Spock could not have imagined this then. He could not have imagined how his hands were hungry for every inch of Jim, pressing and dragging along every inch of exposed skin, leaning into taste to worry at one of Jim's nipples. Jim's breathing hitched at that, caught in his throat as he rolled his hips, Spock's dick sliding between his cheeks. Okay, okay now, Jim decided, getting up, and Spock would deny that he made a longing, bereft sound when Jim got off of him. It would not matter, because Jim was laughing when he returned, a small tube of lubricant clutched in his fist. Yeah, you're not doing me dry, Jim told him, coating his own fingers and reaching behind him. Spock watched, fascinated, at the ease of the motion. How often, he started, wrapping his fingers around Jim's dick. Oh, like every shower, Jim gasped, and sometimes just to have it, could pretend it was you know, was a reminder, to be good. You required reminders, Spock asked, lifting an eyebrow. I'm 16 and hot, Spock. Do you know how many people want to fuck this? People who aren't light years away? Jim demanded, and effectively derailed Spock's rage blackout by guiding Spock's dick inside him. They both hissed at the too tight burn, because Jim was impatient and had not properly prepped himself for the intrusion. Jim's fingers dug into Spock's chest as he lowered himself, until Spock was seated fully inside him. Spock thought he could die from this, that it could kill him. No one else, Spock snarled into Jim's lips when Jim bent for a kiss. No shit, Jim gasped, riding Spock hard. We're never getting out of bed. They have delivery on Vulcan, right? Synthesizers, Spock replied, and was fairly shocked that he could even find that word, that he could find any words. Jim was sweaty, Vulcan hotter than he was used to, and he was trembling, fucking himself back onto Spock and then up into Spock's fist. His skin was flushed, red spreading down his chest and up into his hairline. Jim came first, clenched down almost too hard on Spock when he did. Jim was vocal, surprising no one, but the sound he made when he came, like it was punched out of him, ripped from his lips. Spock wanted that noise again and again. Jim was beginning to slump, and Spock rolled him over, because he was so close, so close. It wouldn't. He knew that the first time often led to one or both parties unsatisfied, but it would be too cool for this not to. Just come on, just fuck me. You're such a. How are you still thinking? Jim demanded, and Spock slammed back into him. He was being too rough, careless in his need, but Jim was only broadcasting pleasure, and when Spock came, he was hunched over Jim, biting down on his shoulder. Jim's hands were in Spock's hair, tugging until Spock let go, could kiss him. They stayed like that, pressed together, for a long time. The sweat on his skin was cooling, and the cum between them was growing tacky, would be uncomfortable in another minute, but Spock didn't care. He listened to Jim catch his breath, felt his heartbeat slow under Spock's palm. Jim shifted, pressing into the pillows a little more firmly, and Spock brushed a kiss to the side of his neck. Broke me, Jim mumbled, and made a soft sound when Spock pulled out of him. He should do that sooner, in the future, but it was not comfortable like this. He stretched over, pulled out a handkerchief, and cleaned them up superficially. Jim was easily manipulated, pliable and acquiescent in Spock's arms. Never, Spock replied, and Jim huffed at the base sentimentality of it, but Spock ignored him. He was unbothered whether or not Jim needed to hear it. Spock needed to say it. Could breathe promises like that into the dark, heavy space between them. It was less terrifying to think, I love you, when there weren't light years between them. Jim's breathing evened, slipping, if not into sleep, then into something close, and Spock shifted, pulling back to trace the marks on Jim's back, the scars just under his left shoulder blade, jagged and thick and never satisfactorily explained. There are others, smaller and familiar, and nothing new. The patches of roughened skin from his flirtation with death had become smoother, and Spock would have missed it if not for the fact that his fingers knew where to go. "I'm boring," Jim mumbled, turning in Spock's arms. His eyes were almost eerie in the dark, lit by the various tech in Spock's room. "Nothing new." "I am grateful," Spock argued, too honest, and he knew it was, that it would have looked a scoff and perhaps embarrassment, but Jim surprised him by laughing a little, shoving at Spock until he had him arranged to Jim's liking. When Jim had settled, half on top of Spock, he pressed a kiss to the underside of Spock's jaw. "Yeah," he murmured, and then settled down, leaving Spock to war against the unexpected surge of violence in his blood. He would kill for this. Could do it. Would destroy planets and civilizations. And this. This was why Sarek had spoken of temperance. Of control. Spock did not know how Cybok lived with this feeling inside of him fully acknowledged. How he retained his composure and compassion. It was dangerous. This was... "Fuck's sake," Jim muttered, batting at Spock's face, uncoordinated and tired. "Go the fuck to sleep." Spock did. Spock woke first. Jim was pressed into Spock's side, defiantly clinging to the small portion of the bed Spock had not taken over, closed in between Spock and the wall. He was beautiful in the warm light of the morning, the reddish hue of the sun touching him in a coppery gold. Spock hesitated to wake him, watching the steady rise and fall of him breathing, remembering that it was a luxury. Jim would jerk awake if Spock made a move towards him, would startle and tense, because Jim Kirk hadn't woken slowly a day of his life, and while Spock would acknowledge much had changed, that never would. Eventually, however, the need to use the bathroom was too great, and Spock extricated himself. He was halfway off the bed when Jim jerked awake, on his elbows and looking around wildly. "Jim," Spock said, and Jim's eyes snapped to him. Some of the fear, wariness, panic, falling from his face. "Spock, it's too early to be awake," Jim groaned, falling back into the pillows. "Then sleep," Spock said. "I hardly need your company while I urinate." "Kinky," Jim approved muzzily, grinning at the ceiling. Spock arched an eyebrow at him, and then went to go do just that. He did not look different. He had expected perhaps some visible cue that he was no longer a virgin, but he simply looked like himself. Really, he was absurd. Jim was warm when Spock slid back into the bed beside him, brushed his thumb over the barely there stubble of his cheek. "I'm not shaving for you," Jim said. "The romance is dead," Spock replied, and Jim cracked an eye open to grin at him. "I'll let you fuck me," he offered, as though in trade, and Spock leaned in and kissed him, less heated than last night, but still hungry. He wanted everything. Perhaps in a week he would not feel so anxious, but for now he was jealous, covetous. For now he was his most human. Jim was still loose from last night, Spock able to slide two fingers in easily once coated with Jim's lube. Jim writhed, incapable of staying still, arching away and bearing down all at once, as though it was too much and not enough simultaneously, and Spock ran his other hand up and down the tight line of Jim's stomach, soothing. Another, come on, I'll get one of those dildos, Spock, I swear, He broke off, high and breathless, as Spock pressed in fingers 3 and 4 and curved them, finding Jim's prostate and pressing relentless. Fuck, shit, Jim gasped, arching up and thrusting his hips helplessly, dick hard and leaking against his stomach. You were saying, Spock asked, and Jim made a wordless sound, though it might have been Romulan. Spock could not quite tell, and it was not the appropriate time to ask about linguistics. He was making grabbing motions with his hands, fingers clenching into fists. Spock went to him easily, let Jim kiss him hungrily, pressed the whole of himself up against Spock. No dildos, Spock murmured against his lips, sucking at the full expanse of Jim's lower lip. Not today, Jim agreed, which was probably as good as a promise as Spock was likely to elicit. Turn over, Spock told him. Bossy, Jim huffed, but did it, wrapping his arms around a pillow as Spock kissed his way down Jim's spine, marveling at the muscle playing across his back, at the way Jim was no longer the skinny child Spock remembered. He bit into the swell of Jim's ass, just to hear the noise, somewhere between indignation and laughter, that Jim would make. Look, I don't know why you think foreplay is the best idea ever invented, Jim managed, but if you don't fuck me, I'm going to, like, explode or something. Spock sighed. Clearly this is something they were going to have to work out, and they had months to do that, a gluttonous expanse of days and nights. Still, he knelt behind Jim, slicking himself again, pumping idly. Jim shoved his ass back, impatient. Wait here, Spock said, pulling at Jim's thighs until he laid down. It was too early to do anything truly athletic, and he could still slide into Jim like this. It was tighter, and he watched as his dick disappeared into Jim, until he couldn't. Had to stop because the haze of sex was tinged with something else. Discomfort. He paused, and heard Jim's breathing hitch an abrupt staccato. It's just fucking deep, Jim managed. When he realized that Spock had stopped, Spock dug his fingers into the sheets, kept his hips still, and pressed his lips against Jim's temple, waiting. It's okay. Okay, let me just... He arched his back a little more, rolling his hips, fucking himself back onto Spock's dick. He did it a couple of times, experimental, and then shifted on his knees, spreading them a little wider. He made a helpless noise, then, one hand flying back to grip at Spock, urged him forward. Fuck me, come on, oh fucking please! Jim groaned. He fucked him with short thrusts. Whatever control he'd had last night evaporated. He wanted, had wanted for years, and Jim was here, fingers pressing bruises into Spock's ass as he pulled him closer, urged him on, panted and squirmed beneath Spock, rolling his hips to meet every one of Spock's thrusts like he could die if he didn't. Spock didn't know who came first, knew only that it was Jim who got up to get a cloth to wipe them down, because Spock was spent, exhausted, defeated. They fucked many different ways. Jim liked to drop down, use his mouth to reduce Spock to a trembling mess. He liked it when Spock was rough, like the last 3 years had failed to teach Jim anything about being gentle. And so by the end of the week, Spock had wrapped Jim's hand around the headboard, told him to stay. He had taken his time, ignoring Jim sobbing and pleading with him. His hands had not moved, and after, Spock had gathered him close, kissed him and kissed him until Jim was himself again. It was not something he would do often. Perhaps when they were older, he would be able to take Jim apart down to the atoms of him, but not yet. Still, eventually they did run out of food, and synthesized vegetation always tasted faintly metallic. This is why you should just eat meat, Jim would say around his steak, and Spock would flick wrong-tasting peas at him. They would have to go into the city, which Jim met with genuine enthusiasm, which was to say, Jim did not balk and offer to trade sexual favors. He did, however, insist upon sunglasses. Your son is really harsh, okay? I have delicate genetic recessive eyes, and you don't know my life. It would be fine, Spock thought. In reality, it would be a disaster. Hiding his one's eyes was a rather egregious faux pas. I absolutely could be your biographer, Spock replied, and resigned himself to the fact that he was always going to be remembered for this, the way people still remembered his father and mother walking around the streets of San Francisco, early into their courtship and still so young. Yeah, Jim agreed, lips twisting up in a smile, as though it was a revelation, to remember that Spock had been there, continued to be there. Yeah, you could. The city was sprawling, ancient and beautiful. It sang with the history of their people, the collective consciousness of Vulcan past and present, and those who might be, if Sybok was to be believed. Jim wanted to go to the very bottom of the buildings, to see the sheer drop below him. Spock looked on indulgently, though he was less indulgent the fifth time. Give me a break, Jim said, hands and face pressed to the glass, sunglasses perched on top of his head. A pink semicircle the shape of Spock's teeth was faintly visible on the back of his neck. We built everything up, and on Tarsus there wasn't a lot of buildings so much as a lot of dying. Spock coughed, because if he did not, he was going to laugh, and the disapproving elders behind them would undoubtedly find someone to tell. It was inappropriate to laugh at tragedy, regardless of Jim's coping mechanisms. They headed up to the primary level, and Spock reminded himself that they weren't 10 anymore. Then he just grabbed hold of Jim's wrist, because he could see the need to pick up, hold, have, take. They stopped at the market, and Spock went to go buy the necessary basics, while Jim refused to be moved from the exotic import section tucked away in its shady corner. Vulcans were nothing if not consistent in their xenophobia, Spock thought to himself. Isolationism was fine until it was embarrassing, and Spock was Vulcan enough to be mortified that he was being humiliated in front of a human. Still, while he was very logically pointing out the vendor's prices were outrageous, Jim came over. Here, Jim said, handing the vendor coins. Those are worth 8 times that, the vendor told him, disapproving. Spock tried to look as though he was simply an onlooker. "Thanks," Jim said brightly, and walked away, produce in hand. "Excuse me," Spock said, and walked behind Jim, watching him pull the stupid human act over and over again. It was illogical to get angry, and none of them figured out how to object, and so Jim walked out, paying the merest fraction of what he should have. "I know you think it's hot," Jim grinned, tilting his sunglasses down when Spock joined him outside. "You are lucky you were not arrested." Jim laughed, bright, and too loud in the space, but Spock could not bring himself to care. "So this is Jim Kirk," Ston said. Spock looked at him, tilting his head in query. "She is shopping," Ston said. "It possibly involves buying the store. I was unclear on the details and did not read into the attack plan." "I see," Spock said. "Yes, Jim. This is Ston. Ston, Jim." Jim lifted his fingers in a salute, which Ston returned, slower. "Thanks for the Tarsus assist," Jim said. "Who is it who's in there, and why are we afraid of her?" "To Pring," Spock said. "Your ex-wife?" "Yes," Spock agreed, because it was simpler to meet Jim's flat tone with a mild carelessness. Easier, perhaps more accurately, it was fun. "Let's go say hi," Jim said, and Spock watched him go up the stairs. "Will you not follow?" Ston asked. "This will surprise you to hear," Spock said, joining him and leaning against the building in the shade, "but I find living preferable to dying." "You are very wise," Ston said gravely. Spock slanted a look at him, and they listened and heard nothing. Spock could not sense any distress, however, so he thought they would be fine. "I approve of him immensely," T'Pring announced. Her arm was linked through Jim's, and Spock counted 5 new pieces of jewelry. Jim had a slender and definitely delicate-looking ring on his pinky. If his ex-wife stole his boyfriend, Spock was actually going to commit grave acts of homicide. "I am thrilled beyond the telling of it," Spock said, extending his hand. Jim caught it, let himself be drawn to Spock, tucking against him and holding out his hand. "She bought me bling." "He is very dishonest," T'Pring reported, putting her arm through Ston's. It was a fascinating turn of events, most unexpected. "He acts as though he has no idea what is happening and blusters through the entire transaction." "Yes," Spock agreed. "We spent only 8 credits in the market." T'Pring lifted her eyebrow. "For all of that?" "You guys really think we're stupid," Jim said. "Turns out you're kind of idiots about it." Spock lifted his eyebrow at him, and Jim just widened his eyes, affecting a blank expression. "Stop it," Spock said, and Jim grinned, knocking his sunglasses down onto his nose. "What are your plans for today?" Ston asked. "Fucking, mostly," Jim said, before Spock could think of a way to maneuver around the question. "Logical," T'Pring agreed. "May your sexual intercourse continue to be satisfying." She and Jim exchanged contact information, and Spock shared a moment of sheer panic with Ston. "I like her," Jim said as they walked away. "You said she's really traditional, though." "She is less so than she was," Spock admitted, allowing Jim to take some of the bags from him. "I believe much of it was parental influence." "Mom's the one who taught us how to do that," Jim said. "The stupid human thing. If people have this perception of you, you shouldn't fight it. Just use it against them. She said Dad always tried to correct people, but she thought it took too long." Spock tried to think of some way to say that he thought she must have been a terrifying woman in a way that would not insult Jim. "She was kind of crazy," Jim said. "It's okay to say you think so." "I do not remember her," Spock demurred, because he was in fact his father's son. "She was frequently gone, and you were absent when she was present." He remembered that vividly, that Winona's return to Jim's life meant that Spock would only see him at school, and then only sometimes. He wondered what Jim would have been like if she had lived, if she would have made any difference. He liked to think she would have. "Yeah," Jim said. And when they rematerialized, a mile from the house, Jim's expression was distant, like he did not allow himself to think of his grief very often, and it was still so sharp because of it. Spock could not imagine it. Number One and Amanda came to the house when Jim and Spock were having a fight. To be fair, they were expected, and had let Jim and Spock know they were on a transporter and only 10 minutes away. Spock just had terrible timing. In his defense, they had been talking about Jim leaving that night, and the conversation spiraled away from them. They were actually very good at displaced anger, both of them. It had been a good day, quiet, and Spock had had Jim. "Shut up, I had you." 3 times. It was a good day until the message came from Amanda saying she was 45 minutes away. And now they were fighting. Jim, Spock had discovered, now flipped to a miasma of Illyri and Romulan when he was mad. Spock had not spoken Romulan in years. Not since. It had been at least 6 years. No one who wasn't Illyrian spoke Illyri, because no native speaker would talk to anyone else about the language. Spock knew this because it was one of his mother's favorite rants. At the end of the 4th week, Spock was back to his old fluency in Romulan, and was conversant in Illyri out of sheer self-defense. All of which meant that Amanda and Number One walked in. Jim and Spock were fighting across the house in 4 languages, mostly about the fact that Jim was refusing to take a Starfleet Academy-sponsored year next year that would put him ahead when he finally went to the Academy. "You don't actually run my fucking life!" Jim snarled from where he was packing in the bedroom. Number One was going to stay on Vulcan for another month, but Jim was going home to take entrance exams. If Spock had to follow him, sit him down in the chair, and force him to participate, he would. "Neither do you," Spock pointed out, carefully slicing mushrooms in the kitchen. "Obviously. Maybe I don't..." "Try that on someone who will believe it, though I wish you luck finding someone who will," Spock interrupted, and Jim threw himself into a chair into the island. It was an odd thing. Spock's mother frequently walked away when she was arguing with his father. Jim refused, would dog Spock's heels, grab at him, force the confrontation. It was Spock who was constantly trying to walk away from it, trying to give them both space. "Are we interrupting?" Number One asked from the door, and they both jerked up. Spock missed his fingers only because Jim grabbed the knife from him. "You are in time for dinner," Spock replied, and she nodded, her dark eyes on Jim. "Were you speaking Romulan?" Amanda asked Spock, putting her bags down and unbinding her hair with a sigh. "Did I know you could speak Romulan? Are you fluent in Romulan?" "I do not do it often," Spock said, starting on the peppers. "That's not a no," she pointed out, taking over the dinner preparations from him. "And that's quite a hickey." Spock slapped a hand to his neck, staring at Jim, who smirked at him and pointed, mouthing, "other side." Amanda was laughing, though. Cybok was impossible to embarrass, she reflected, almost wistfully. "So you will torment me because you could not do so to him?" Spock asked, wronged. Cybok was the worst. He challenged anyone to endure Cybok as an older brother. Even in his absence, he still tormented. "Someday you'll be a parent and understand," she said comfortingly, and started boiling water for pasta. "Or not, and you'll carry this injustice to your grave." Number One and Jim were talking quietly, and it was interesting, looking at them together. Number One was shorter than Jim now, slight and delicate, and both of them had their hands in their pockets. Strange mirrors. He wondered if perhaps Number One had been. They all knew of the Illyri sector wars. They consumed and devoured the planet until children had reached out to the Federation. Of those children, only one was found alive, and she had been one of the king's wives. Yuriliva Sobayan Dadaishkov disappeared shortly after a truce was negotiated, and no one had seen her since. Spock wondered how young she had truly been. She was not more than 40 now, and the last of those wars had been at least 20 years ago. It had been all bloody and brutal, and the Illyri people would not speak of them, even now. It was still too raw. Spock wondered, watching her navigate Jim's space, if she had been as instrumental as Pike in Jim's recovery, if perhaps she had been more so. You said you didn't speak it anymore, Amanda accused abruptly. A Number One lifted her head, one of her eyebrows lifting as well. She was actually strikingly beautiful. No, I said I wouldn't teach you, she corrected, smirking. What are you cooking? Is it terrible? Amanda narrowed her eyes and then looked at Jim. Are you fluent? She demanded. Jim said, glancing between them and then at Spock. What? Illyri, are you fluent? No. Jim said, slouching a little, chin tilted up. Lie, Spock said mildly. Jim glared at him. Perhaps you two could speak it to one another. Spock and I are very quick learners. It would be helpful to add it to the Universal Translator, Amanda said, pointedly glaring at Number One. Spock could feel that this was a very old argument. Wait, I have a better idea, Number One said, widening her eyes for effect. We don't, and say we did. Jim was laughing, chewing on his lower lip. And Spock was so grateful to his mother, to Number One. The evening went smoothly, though Jim was quieter than he had been. Number One made up the difference, deftly turning the conversation around, and when she and Jim had left for the night, Spock expected nothing. If Spock had been reluctant to let anyone see their relationship out of self-defense, Jim was only performative when it suited him. So it was a surprise when on their doorstep, it was Jim who leaned in to kiss Spock good night, his hand sliding up to palm Spock's jaw, holding him close until Spock's hands gripped his hips. I'll see you, Jim said. Let me know when you are on board and when you arrive, Spock said, releasing him, and it took a moment for Jim to step away from him. Really good friends, Amanda said when the door was shut. Spock looked at her. I did not lie to you. You admitted, she said, folding her arms over her chest. Your father tries to pull that with me sometimes, and do you know what I say? Lying is lying, whether by omission or falsehood, Spock repeated dully, because this, at least, he knew. Exactly, she agreed, and exhaled through her nose, looking tired. Are you in love with him? I am 17. She nodded. Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. Come on, help me clean up. He did not notice it at first, though he could be excused for that. It was just a small binder on his desk, and he was distracted by Jim leaving. One more year, and he would never have to do it again. Not unless he decided to leave, or Jim did. One more year before the decision was theirs. T'Pring and Ston came over, and it was T'Pring who found it. I liked him, Ston was saying, though you never buy me jewelry. It is logical to adorn beautiful things, T'Pring replied, and Ston looked at Spock, who only just refrained from pointing out that Ston was the one who had fallen in love with T'Pring, and he knew what she was like. We are friends now, she added. You're friends with a human, Ston agreed. Yes, she agreed. My mother is having fits. Spock did not know what it said about him that T'Pring's rebellion was linked to his boyfriend, but he was certain it was nothing good. She continued to flip through the file idly. I did not know you were applying to the Science Academy, she said, arching an eyebrow at him. I thought you were going to Starfleet Academy. I am, Spock said, and she handed him the sheaf of papers. That is your signature, she said. I, the above signed, verify that this application to the Vulcan Science Academy is complete and accurate. It was his signature. We could make him an honorary Vulcan on his bureaucratic aptitude alone, T'Pring murmured as she went through it. They could not refuse you based upon this application. They could not refuse you anything with this application. How did he get the notes of recommendation? Ston wondered, flipping through the other pages. I do not know, Spock said tightly. He was furious and hurt, and he wanted to jump on a ship and go to Earth and shake Jim, demand answers from him. The application was in perfect mimic of Spock's handwriting, down to the syntax of his sentences. It would be flattering to be so known, if Jim was not so wrong. Spock pulled out his phone while Ston and T'Pring marveled over the application. Kirk, this is remarkably unsubtle, even for you, Spock said.
Well, I guess it's good that subtle wasn't what I was going for, Jim said. You should send it in.
No one rejects them if they get accepted, Spock said.
I know,
Jim agreed, and Spock stopped wondering if they were even having the same conversation.
Hey, I gotta go. Fifth period is starting. Call you later.
Spock stared down at his phone, and then at the application and course materials, and then at his friends. Jim did not call him back, and Spock could not bring himself to shake answers out of Jim. Not when. It was bizarre. It was so strange, the timing of it. And it was such a misread of Spock. Going to VSA was a commitment to the Vulcan way of life that Spock had not been comfortable making for over a decade. He had long ago realized that he could not be himself if he was going to hold himself to an ideal that he neither agreed with nor extolled. More than that, they had been fine. Better than. They had relearned each other. Spock had thought that month was a reaffirmation. But what had triggered in Jim the thought that Spock should stay on Vulcan? Had the kiss been a goodbye? It was not as though Spock was in this relationship because it was fun for him. Granted, yes, the sex was great, and when they were good together, they were incredible. But it was hard, and Jim was... not easy. Spock had broken laws for their friendship, and Jim's name, and he regretted none of it, would do it all again in a second. But he had invested time and money and himself into this relationship, and here in his hands he held the obvious truth that Jim... valued none of those things so highly. And Spock could not... He did not know who he was without Jim. In all the ways Spock had been there for Jim, Jim had been there for Spock, pulling him out of his head and coming up with kidnapping plots and being this place Spock could just be. Jim Kirk was the first person to accept Spock as a person. There was nowhere else in the universe Spock knew to go to figure things out except where Jim was. Even Spock's mother had come to terms with their relationship. When he had been too young to know better and too young to understand, he had thrown his lot in with a boy who was incapable of keeping himself safe, let alone the piece of Spock he had been given. And it was hardly fair, because Jim never asked for it, never pretended that he was in any way equipped to handle what Spock was giving him, never pretended that he even understood that he had been given something. But it had been years since Spock felt the need to remind himself of that. Apparently, he should have been more vigilant in remembering, and remembering that Winona Kirk's legacy of running until you run out of ground lived on in her youngest son. It was like listening to Jim drive off the cliff again. He felt as though he was standing on the landing of the embassy in San Francisco. Here he was again, too far away to do anything useful, to do any good, while Jim did something to permanently erase himself from Spock's life. He should have remembered that despite all of his healing, all of the ways in which he was better, Jim Kirk was still a fucking asshole. Chapter 11. Spock had had a headache since midsummer. It was a persistent, terrible thing that occasionally manifested as a ringing in his ears, but whenever he focused on it, it vanished. It was obnoxious, and made it all the more difficult to deal with his peers. There were sneers and taunts, the likes of which he had not experienced since early childhood. It seemed as though all of Vulcan had seen him with Jim, displaying affection, and were set on punishing him for it. It was all of the sins of his parents being revisited on him, but he was not a small child anymore, committed to them or their way of life. His classmates had moved on from their methodical harassment, and were now blithely cruel. Spock had learned to be cruel while hiding from an abusive step-parent. This was literally child's play for him. "I do not think you said it with sufficient venom," T'Pring observed, after Spock had advised their chemistry professor to live long and prosper. "One cannot lie in the imperative tense," Spock pointed out. T'Pring looked up at him and shook her head. "Ston is in the labs. Unsupervised?" "I have decided that he is not my responsibility," T'Pring said. "And neither is the welfare of everyone else." Spock thought if he had been friendless on Vulcan, things would have been much different. Perhaps he would have tried harder to fit in, would have considered more seriously applying to the VSA. Now, though, he could not imagine doing so. Starfleet Academy did its acceptance interviews the year before attendance in order to ensure all students who would like to apply had the opportunity to do so. Spock had his material submitted with recommendations from professors and Captain Pike prior to Jim's visit, and in late July they had called him for an interview. He was scheduled to go on his mid-semester break. He had to perform to the highest standards this semester. He had to do so in spite of everyone, and so he had no time to dwell on Jim. There had been a few messages, stupid little things as though nothing had changed, when clearly everything had, and Spock had not known how to respond, and then it had been far too late to respond, and now the silence was deafening. "Excuse me," T'Pring murmured, looking down at her pad. Spock saw the name Kirk and blinked at her. "You still speak?" he asked, and she looked up from her tablet, fingers pausing over the controls. "Yes," she said. "Of me?" he asked. He felt sick, betrayed. "No," she said. She glanced at Ston, who was singed around the edges as he approached them, then at Spock. She lifted a curious eyebrow. "Should I be?" "No," Spock said quickly. "No, it was inappropriate of me to inquire. I apologize." "When is your interview at Starfleet?" Ston asked, showing remarkable tact. "In 2 weeks. I will leave after classes end, and spend the remainder of the break in San Francisco. I have not seen Cybok or my father in quite some time. I believe my mother also intends that we will spend winter break there." T'Pring nodded. "Logical," she approved, and Ston's face did not move, but they all knew he was rolling his eyes. "The thing is," Cybok said, because in the absence of Jim, Spock had started speaking to his brother more regularly. Spock did not, in fact, like what it revealed about him, that only when Jim was gone did he look to his own brother for company. "They're going to be relieved to be rid of you." "Thank you, Cybok," Spock sighed. "I don't mean anything by it," Cybok protested. "They're really excited when they got rid of me." "So I should be comparatively flattered?" Spock asked, frowning. "It's just, the way I always thought of it was, why bother, you know? They don't want you, or they only want you on certain terms, and those terms are absolute bullshit, so why would you try to be less than just to please them?" It made a great deal of sense, and Spock clung to it, let it settle in his spine. When they sneered at him, commented on his poor breeding, he ignored them with lifted chin and impenetrable shields. He was meant for more than this. But sometimes, when it was quiet, he wondered if he was not, if he was meant to pursue a career at the VSA, if that was what Jim, who knew him best, had seen for him. The plan had always been to reunite at Starfleet, but Spock wondered now if that had only ever been his dream, not one shared between them. His fingers itched for his phone, would punch in Jim's number, hold down the speed dial, but he could. He aborted, always, before it rang through. It would be worse to know for certain, and in some ways, Spock was a coward. It was a relief when school broke and he packed for Earth. He was surprised to find he missed the planet. It did not feel any more home than Vulcan, but then it did not feel any less like home than Vulcan either. He was simply caught in between. He was learning to accept it, learning to accept that his path was his to forge. Sybok met him at the platform, took his bags and hugged him enthusiastically, kissing the top of Spock's head. "You're tall," he accused. "Like, really tall." "I am thrilled beyond the telling that your eyesight remains functional," Spock told him, and Sybok threw back his head, laughing. "Sybok, what is growing on your face?" "I like a beard now," Sybok said earnestly as they headed for their shuttle. His hair was long and curled messily around his head. The beard was scraggly, untrimmed, and unimpressive. Perhaps in 20 years he could grow a respectable beard. "It is terrible," Spock said flatly. "Shave it immediately." "You're not the boss of me," Sybok told him, stroking his beard and pouting. Spock lifted an eyebrow. "Yes," he said, "I am." "What are you going to do? Pinch me and shave me?" "Wait, Spock, don't actually do that," Sybok amended quickly while Spock gave him his best air. "Ugh, little siblings are the worst," Sybok sighed. Earth was beautiful, young where Vulcan felt settled, diverse while Vulcan was homogeneous. He inhaled the scent of the sea as they departed docking, walking carefully to adjust to the gravity shift. On Earth he felt impossibly light. If he was human, he might try to find a metaphor on that. There was a car waiting, and Sybok stayed quiet for much of the ride. That he would stay silent for all of it was clearly too much to ask. "So you two still aren't okay?" he asked finally. "What?" Spock asked. "You keep checking out anyone in a cadet's outfit," Sybok said gently, as though breaking terrible news. "Is he even a cadet?" "Prep," Spock said shortly, sitting back in the seat and staring straight ahead. Sybok touched his knee gently. "Still?" he asked tentative, as though he thought Spock was going to yell at him. They were older now. Sybok might never like Jim, but Spock was nearly 18 and able to make his own choices. Sybok would always be his older brother, but they were on more even footing than they had ever been before. Sybok could not influence Spock's choices anymore. Not that he had ever been able to, not really. "My interview is tomorrow," Spock said, swallowing carefully. "What if I am not prepared?" "Yeah, that's hilarious," Sybok snorted. "I am not joking." "That's because you got Dad's sense of humor," Spock told him apologetically. "Sybok," Spock snapped. "Oh, there you are," Sybok was grinning, impossible and wide, and Spock blinked. "What?" "It's weird. It's like you got more repressed." "I have been reading on Kolinar," Spock admitted. "Not as an ambition, you understand. Simply, it has been difficult. These past months have been difficult." "What happened?" He made it clear that he did not want me anymore. He thought my place was on Vulcan. "Bull," Sybok said, opening the door as the cab pulled to a stop. He reached around to feed the meter, and then helped Spock out of the car and onto the sidewalk. "No," Spock said softly, looking at the embassy and pushing open the gate. It felt strangely as though he was coming full circle. "No, I do not think it is." Sybok did not call Spock a liar. He just muttered about stupid kids and their bullshit until Spock did, in fact, administer the pinch. "Spock, welcome," Sarek said, his calm gaze drifting to Sybok, crumpled in the front hall. "Ah," he said, "it is always pleasing to have one's children so close to one," he observed. The interview was a 3-to-1 meeting with Starfleet professors. They asked him what languages he spoke, why he wanted to be a member of Starfleet. They wondered, did he understand what a commitment it would be? Would he tell them about Tarsus IV? Was he comfortable in a multi-ethnic setting? Did he have friends who weren't Vulcan? What did it mean to him to be such a strong touch telepath? Did he feel he would have sufficient control? They all knew him, knew his story, who his parents were. Everyone of a certain age knew Spock's story, gave him a second glance when they read his name or he introduced himself. He was gratified that they did not ask him about his parents, that they asked him about himself. What did he want? Where did he see himself? They gave him the coursework, said that due to the way Vulcan school systems worked, he would be heavy on the physical side of Starfleet coursework, less on the theoretical, generalized concepts. His advisor, they said, would help him to navigate all of that. "You will likely finish your undergraduate studies in 3 years," Admiral Vikor told him. "Whether you take up an active commission at that point or continue on in your coursework is up to you, but you'll be better informed to make that decision when we come up against it." They would consider everything, and he would have an answer in 3 weeks, they told him, and they conscientiously raised their hands in farewell, mindful of touch telepathy. He felt confident as he left. It had been illuminating and vindicating. This, at least, was still a good choice. He was completely unprepared to see Jim. He wasn't doing anything, just sprawled out under a tree, reading. But it was Jim Kirk being quiet when there was no one around to manipulate, and Spock scarcely knew what to do with that. He stepped forward, off the path, thought to say something, anything, but the words would not come. And Jim was okay. Jim was okay, and that was all Spock had ever really wanted, and if Spock's absence was contributing to that, then he could hardly in good conscience stand in the way. He withdrew back to the path. "There you are," Sybok exclaimed, his voice too loud, and Spock closed his eyes against the headache. Delayed reaction to stress, no doubt. Sybok was eating some kind of frozen chocolate concoction. Excellent. He would be drunk in 5 minutes. "My Sunday brings all the hotties to the yard," Sybok told him seriously. It had the cadence of a quote, though Spock was not familiar with the source material. "How'd it go?" he asked, pulling Spock in by wrapping an arm around his shoulders. Sybok was impossibly tactile, but he was calming right now. "I will have a decision in 3 weeks," Spock said. "They're going to accept you," Sybok scoffed, as though to consider anything else was absurd. "We shall see," Spock allowed. His headache was worse than ever, perhaps the stress. He needed to go home, meditate, perhaps even sleep. As impossible as it was to consider that they would not let him in, it seemed equally impossible to think that they would let him in. It was too overwhelming to think about, so he put it out of his mind. It was illogical to worry, but not worrying was exhausting. "So," Sybok said as they left campus, "are we going to talk about the fact that your bond is killing you, or are you just ignoring it?" Spock paused, rubbing his temples. He gave it several seconds, but he did not understand. "What?" "Seriously," Spock demanded, reaching over and pressing his hand to Spock's cheek. His fingers were cool, and the ringing in Spock's ears dimmed almost to nothing. "How are you so bad at this?" "I am not Vulcan." "Fucking, okay, fine, look. You had a fucking bond with Jim Kirk forever, but it got, like, bondmate level when he came back from Tarsus. Mom and Dad pulled you away, hoping the distance would change it. Kinda hoped you'd fall in love with T'Pring, actually, though I did say it wasn't going to work." "No one said," Spock said, racking his memory. Sometimes Sybok had a point about their inherent repression in their culture. There was no open dialogue about how to recognize an unplanned bond, a telepathic link. If there had been, Spock might have known, might have recognized the signs and been able to stop it all before it got to this point. Could you break it for me?" "You... what?" Sybok demanded, taken aback. Spock sighed. "Not now," he clarified. "Right now I'm tired." He contemplated confronting their mother, but his father was closer and would have recognized more acutely what was happening. His mother had thought perhaps he was infatuated with Jim. His father must have known otherwise. Now his father looked at him and said, "It seems premature to request the breaking of a full bond at this juncture." "Elaborate." "You have been out of contact with Jim Kirk for 5 months. It would be logical for you to confront this issue and deal with it instead of asking for your brother to raise your mind." "Sybok is a doctor," Spock pointed out. "Spock, why did you not tell me? I was not raised on Vulcan, and you were responsible for educating me." "And I have failed you in that, yes. I thought you would realize on your own, and that if this sort of situation would arise, that you would stay true to the precedent and go find Jim Kirk," Sarek replied, and tilted his head. "Why have you not?" "He hurt my feelings," seemed like such an infantile response for all its accuracy. "He made it clear he was finished with me, did not feel right either." "Perhaps you should think on it," Sarek said. "Take some time. Meditate." Spock went up to his old room. It had been so easy, all of it, it had. To everyone else it was so difficult. Their relationship had been so fraught, but it had not been the case. Spock had always known what to do. Jim had always given him a sign. But here he was, floundering in a room he had outgrown long ago, filled with shadows and memories. He did not meditate. He could not find the peace of mind. When the sun rose high in the sky again, he called for a cab and took it to Chris Pike's house, because if this was going to hurt, he wanted to have earned it. He wanted to understand. He pressed the doorbell. Chris Pike opened the door, blinked at Spock, and said, "He's still in bed." "I remember the way," Spock said. "Yeah," Pike agreed, exhaling. "Yeah, I'll just bet you do. Thing is, it's a school break, and he's not going to be up for another 3 hours, so you can park it and make yourself comfortable. I gotta go to work." Spock nodded, stepping inside and letting Pike pass him. "Oh, hey, Spock, whatever the hell it is you did, You break his heart and I'll come after your ass. Spock looked at him. Yes, that seems fair. It was 0900. Spock sat on the couch, read the news, tidied a bit, and made lunch. At 1300, Jim wandered downstairs, scratching his stomach and yawning enormously. You cooked? He asked, scrunching up his face, and then he saw Spock, and the atmosphere became charged, tense. Hello, Jim, Spock said. It was not as though Jim had been a constant presence in Spock's life. They had gone long bouts of not speaking, usually because of Jim, for whatever reason. And they had fought all the time as children. So this wasn't... This distance probably had a lot to do with how well they had been getting along. In the end, it was not an unfamiliar set of circumstances, but it had been. It had been a long time since Spock had felt like Jim was starting the argument without him. Worse, this time it was as though Jim had already had the argument, lived through the fallout, and moved on. Spock, he had forgotten the feeling of being a step behind. Forgotten that Jim could do that to him. When he had been 14, waiting for Jim to arrive after Tarsus IV, he had thought about Jim as Tehyla. A year later, his father had intimated that he understood Spock felt that way about Jim, and all of the definitions of the word. Right now, standing in Captain Pike's kitchen, the pasta cooling in front of him, staring at Jim, who looked sleep-muzzled but so sharp, Spock could not remember why that might have been. Spock, Jim replied, folding his arms across his chest. What are you doing? Spock asked, and do not refer to the fact that you were standing in the hall. I can see that. Staring at a moron, Jim said, and Spock's head was throbbing now. He was so stupid not to have realized what that meant. Interesting, as I do not see your mirror anywhere, he replied, which was wrong. Was not how he meant to start this, but he could not bite back the automatic response fast enough. Did you come just to call me names? Jim asked flatly. Like, who even let you in? Captain Pike, as he was leaving for work, Spock said. Fucking of course he did. Jim sighed. Why are you on Earth? I had my interview at Starfleet on Monday. Jim did not look surprised. It was inappropriate, what you did, Spock told him, to interfere like that and then not explain at all. I'm actually going to kill you, Jim said, almost conversational. He was so beautiful, Spock could not help but think, and Spock was so invested. Okay, can I just point out, you're getting pissed because I went behind your back and arranged your life, right? That is, yes, the major point of the argument, Spock agreed, though there were nuances he felt Jim was ignoring. Jim stared at him, and then burst into a flurry of action, slamming his hands against the wall and laughing incredulously. Are you fucking kidding me, Spock? I applied to a school for you. You fucking got me adopted. You had no one. You would have. Yeah, it turned out great, but you don't really get to be pissy with me about the one thing I did, because mine was like an option. You didn't have to go. And hey, you didn't, but you... I woke up and you had signed on the dotted line for me. So, you know, comparatively, if anyone is going to get pissed about the other person being an interfering shit dick, I win forever. Jim said, breathing hard. There was color high on his cheeks, and he was looking at the window just past Spock's shoulder. You did not call, Spock pointed out. Your phone broke? You gave me that. No, you did not even do me the courtesy of that. You simply left it for me to find once you had gone. What was I supposed to? Maybe not think I was fucking breaking up with you? Although clearly you're okay with that, because hey, here we are, and we are fully bonded, Spock snapped at him. It has ramifications for you, which I do not fully understand, and... No fucking shit, Jim snapped, throwing up his hands. Really? Spock stopped talking, startled into silence. What? You didn't know? Jim demanded. Seriously, you didn't know? I knew we were. T'Pring brought it to my attention, but it was weaker, the type which I maintain with my family. There was some speculation, but the other day Cybok said... Jim groaned, scrubbing his face with his hands. Spock, you are... You can't... He broke off, shifted his posture. He looked older, more grown up somehow. It was as sudden as flicking a switch. Do you not want to be? He asked, level and calm, as though this wasn't the most extraordinarily absurd question Spock had ever heard in his life. And once someone had asked him if he had tear ducts. Spock could not find the words. One wrong word and Jim would be gone. Of that he had no doubt. But the longer he stood here and searched for the perfect phrasing, the more he looked at it like he was trying to find a way to be kind and... What do you want, Spock? Jim asked. He sounded resigned, tired suddenly, like all the fight had been beaten out of him. Jim only ever sounded that way for Spock, he realized. I want to know when you decided you were through with us, Spock said, and the laugh was like a physical blow. He had, Jim might have yelled. He had thought, or been stonily angry, but laughing was not something Spock felt he'd prepared for. I didn't make that call. I put it in your hands, and you're the one who decided to be done. Spock stared at him, at the sad set of Jim's mouth, the way he was tucked into himself, and there was clearly something Spock had missed. He was, in fact, an idiot. He was an idiot, and Jim had gotten it before Spock. Spock needed Jim, wanted him, but it was possible none of it had translated in his head. They were just them, and Spock had been willing to follow them, however it manifested. He had kissed Jim, and Jim had escalated, because Jim always escalated, took the pressure off of Spock and kept them moving. And they had fit together so well that month, had woken up in the morning, and yes, sometimes they had fucked, but some mornings they had just stumbled into the kitchen to get breakfast, Spock bullying Jim into consuming more than tea while Jim complained at him. It wasn't out, Spock realized. No shit, Jim snapped, fingers twitching against his thighs. It had been an out. Their time together last summer had been good, and Spock had relearned Jim, but it was more than that. He was meeting Jim for the first time. This Jim, a Jim who could charm Vulcans and hold his own against Spock's mother, and walk through a market without stealing anything. Jim had always had it in him to be this person, but here he was, grown into it, or at least realizing the potential of who he could be, and Jim had been asking if Spock wanted him. It had been Jim's way of asking if Spock could want a Jim Kirk who was centered, had things going for him, a Jim Kirk who did not require Spock's help, who had little need for his money, who might be able to jump before being told. You are so incredibly stupid, Spock managed finally. I'm stupid, Jim repeated, incredulous. You're the asshole who thought, I don't know what I was. I don't even know. Because you're stupid, Spock agreed. Because if you thought for a second that after all of this, after a decade and more of this, of time and money, and if you thought that I was going to let you go after you're finally okay. Only that was the wrong thing to say, because Jim's jaw clenched and he tilted his head slightly, eyes dangerous. So now that you've fixed me, you want me, but once I've repaid my debt... Jim. No, seriously, Spock, how does this play out? We have, like, 5 years of good times, like June, and then you get tired and find someone else who's really fucked up, do the whole cycle over again, make sure they're really indebted to you, make sure they misjudge the entire situation. I cannot believe how infantile you are being right now, Spock snapped. If you think so little of me that I would... I am going to keep you. Yeah? Awesome. Everyone's dream. Stop it, Spock yelled, grabbing Jim's wrist as Jim stormed past him towards the door. He wanted to shake him, to hit him, but they were too old for that. He had come too far for it. I desire to keep you because I am in love with you and have been miserable these past months. Do you want a proposal? We can go to Las Vegas right now if that is what you want. Just, Jim, you have to tell me what you want. Jim's words were exquisite, thick and smooth without cracks. He was impenetrable, and Spock could not read him. Not at all. It hurt. All of it hurts. I am going to Starfleet as we planned, he said. I am right here, and in 6 months nothing is going to be able to move me. I am right here. Spock. Jim broke himself off, and he looked tired. Spock wanted to shield him, to protect him. But Spock had never been able to protect Jim from Spock himself. He had always wanted too much of him. Spock had lived all of Jim's trauma secondhand. He had found solace in the eye of the hurricane, taking advantage of the way Jim could keep everything at bay. I know you, he thought. I do not want to know who I am without you. You didn't call. Not a message. Nothing. A miscalculation. Did you say you'd marry me? Jim demanded, and Spock stared at him. That had been at least 5 minutes ago. You are only now... Shut up, Spock. Jim, why are you going to Starfleet? Because Captain Pike made many compelling arguments in its favor, Spock said. I believe it is important to see what is out there, and would be a stimulating experience. If you do this again, I'll fucking kill you, Jim warned him. On the condition you cease manipulating... Ha! Jim barked out, letting Spock pull him in by the wrist, link his forefingers through Jim's belt loops. Pot, kettle. Perhaps we can be better. Well, I mean, you can try, Jim mused, and leaned in to kiss Spock, no doubt to ensure he had the last word. There would, Spock knew, be more battles. Small ones about the fact that Spock had no plans to live in the dorms, and if Jim thought he was living anywhere but with Spock, he was insane. Jim was considering engineering. He would be a better fit in command. There would be bigger ones, too, about what tours to take, whether they could stand to be apart, whether they would take leave, if they could work together. But Spock would be damned if they ever wound up here again, strangers after 5 months of bitterness and resentment. He would not make that mistake again, though he doubted Jim would let him. "I am going to keep you," he thought, and meant it in terrible ways. "I have survived this, and that means I get to keep you." The end.